Hello and welcome to the Greatest Games Podcast, brought to you by 816 Basketball. I'm one of your hosts, Brian Rosefield, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris de Blasio.
Thank you, Brian. As always, the Greatest Games Podcast is a chance for us to catch up with basketball coaches around the country and have them tell us about their greatest game. It can be a time when they were a head coach, an assistant coach, a CYO coach, a fourth grade coach. We've had people talk about all kinds of games. We just want them to tell us what they consider to be their greatest game.
Chris, we are making history. All we do is make history. And this is a little bit of a different history. We have not gotten into South Carolina for a high school coach since episode 32. We had Andrew Peckham on. That was June the 28th, so a while ago now. So we are bringing in the first-year head coach. He's brand new at Dreer High School, Daryl Jarvis. Welcome to the Greatest Games Podcast.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here, man. I appreciate the invite.
Well, now, Coach Jarvis he might not even know this. There was a great player back at Dreer High School in probably the late 60s, early 70s, named Curtis March. He's probably in the Hall of Fame there or something. And Curtis March was the head coach where, Brian Rosefield?
I'm just going to go ahead and let you answer that one, Chris de Blasio.
Teaneck High School.
At Teaneck. Are you kidding? Really?
Yeah. Coach March was a Columbia native and from Dreer High School and made his way up here and was one of the most successful coaches in New Jersey for 20 years.
So for Daryl and for all of our listeners, yeah, Teaneck is
– That's where I went to high school, Coach.
So perennial power, Teaneck High School, right?
Yeah. Yep. So there we go. I'm always dropping it for you, Rosefield. Knowledge, history, connections, whatever you want.
Yeah, well, you know, and Daryl, and for all of our listeners, they all know that. And Daryl, as a listener, you know it too, that history and I just don't have a great relationship. I've got good relationships with other things like cheese and food, any kind of food, but history just don't get along very well.
I'm with you, Brian. I'm with you.
Well, Coach, why don't you start off by we did it off the air a little bit, but take us through your resume and where you've been and how you got to now all the way to Dreer High School with the legendary athletic director, Jeff DiBattista. But take us through how you got there.
Legendary DiBattista, that's right. I actually played high school at Ridgeview High School. I'm proud to say I'm part of the first full graduating class from 95 to 99.
I was going to say, you must have been one of the early classes there, yeah.
Yeah, the first freshman when the doors opened, I was brand new, spanking baby, walking in the door, man. That was a special moment to be a part of something like that. You know, we had a lot of firsts. We had first region team. That was an ROTC. We had the first honor unit with distinction. So that was a very fun phase of life. Be able to walk in a brand new building and put your stamp on it. You guys talk about history. That's some history you can't get rid of right there. And then after I played, I went to Johnson C. Smith in Charlotte, and I went to walk on and actually made the practice squad. But I left after the first semester. That $14,000 bill was pretty hefty. And I was like, yeah, these student loans are going to add up in the long run. So I came home, and in January, Ricky Bartnight was the head coach at Ridgeview. He asked me to come back to coach. I helped Ricky for about 2 years, and then Vince Lowry, who was my coach in high school, and Ricky was my coach my last 2 years in high school. So I came back, did that from 2000-2005, and then when Ricky went to Brooklyn Casey, he called me again. That's when Vince went to Blythewood to be the athletic director, and I spent – from 2005 to 2009 as his associate head coach. I have to give those two guys a lot of credit while I'm talking about it, because they really helped me get in the door and taught me a ton of not just the game of basketball, but relationships with people, the admin part of it. I got a lot of valuable information as a young guy. So those are like Ridgeview and Brooklyn Casey are probably my two biggest years of two schools of foundation, man. It was just a lot of fun. From there, I went to Eau Claire High School. I did 2 years there as a JV coach, head coach, and assistant coach. And then from there, I went to 5 years at C.A. Johnson. First stint as a head coach, which was extremely fun. I was actually 29, turning 30 that year when I got the job. So I was fairly young, but not new to it. But it was exciting. It was fun. And from there, I took some time off, and I actually did some semi-pro basketball. That we still do it. We just haven't done anything this summer due to COVID. And then I went to West Florence for 2 years, and now I'm here at Dreher High School, which is pretty funny because my principal at Dreher and DiBattista, the legend, you know, they know each other. So, you know, it was a great transition. It was nice to be able to come back home for my kids, get them closer to home. So here I am, man, excited, ready to go. The unfortunate part is you get the new job, you're excited, you're ready to crack the whip, and COVID says pump the brakes. Can't do nothing yet. So here we are.
That's right. We're hoping to open back up here soon. I'm hopeful right now that we'll be able to have a season and all that kind of stuff. But Daryl, you talk about just two unbelievable guys, Ricky Balknight, Vince Lowry. And I know lots of times with this show here, we have a lot of listeners in New Jersey, a lot of listeners in South Carolina and beyond. People don't know who these guys are, and that's okay. But two of the great just basketball coaches, but basketball guys you could ever have as a young coach. So you get a head coaching job at age 29, age 30. And I know you're always learning and always growing. So my question to you now to start off with is what's some belief that you had when you got your first head coaching job, or maybe even when you got into coaching in general, that now is just completely changed for you?
I think my form of discipline for the reasons of why I do things. I remember when Coach Lowry asked me to be the B team head coach, and I had some practices. He would walk in the gym and say, "Are you running them because they made mistakes, or are you running them because you're mad today? What is the reason?" So my philosophy on running and the discipline part is more of, now we're going to run because practice is competitive, and maybe we're not meeting certain goals, and maybe we're not meeting certain times, as opposed to just, you know, as a young coach, you bark in and you're yelling and, "Hey, let's get on the line" all the time. You know, as you get a little older, you know, you change your philosophy. Some of my younger players come back and say, "Coach, you got soft." No, I've gotten smarter, because, you know, it's hard to put kids on the line just to be running kids for the sake of running them anymore. You know, those days have changed. So you got to evolve with the game. So I think the way that I discipline it is a lot different now.
I had my mic off. Darn. That's really interesting. One of the clips I pulled today from another episode, Brian, a little behind the scenes, was one of the coaches talking about one of his old players coming back saying the same thing. Say, "Coach, you kind of gotten soft." And he said, "No, I just, you know, do things differently nowadays a little bit." And I think that's certainly true. You know, the way the game, you know, the way you ran in the 90s is not the same. The discipline is different.
I think that's something every coach goes through it too, whether it was the 80s, 70s, 89ers, whatever. Every coach just grows and changes and evolves, and I think that's just inherent with the game for sure.
All right, Coach, I'm going to ask you a fun question. We want a fun story here. Tell us about a good technical foul you got, like a real good one.
It's funny you ask that question, because I want to say maybe my third year at Johnson, I think year we won the state championship. We played Dreher High School the first game. Tevin Mack was a senior. I can't think the fit for the official's name. Jeff DiBattista was the head coach at Dreher. We had some great battles. And, you know, I always hate it when people walk into the gym and they get this favoritism because they're the Tevin Macks or the Seven Woods or whatever the case may be. And it seems like every time Tevin touched the ball, the whistle was blown. So I'm giving the ref, you know, a little bit of fit. You know, I'm in his ear a little bit. And he's like, "All right, Coach, that's enough." Okay, I sat down. The whistle's still going. So finally we get a call. And I think we were probably, I don't know, I think maybe 4 minutes left in the first quarter. I'm sitting down on the bench, and I just bust out in a loud clap. I mean, I'm clapping about as loud as I can clap. And the next thing you know, I get a tech. He walks across the floor and throws me out in the first quarter.
Whoa.
So, yeah, yeah. So, luckily, I got it overturned by the high school. I didn't have to pay the $300 fine. But, man, listen, I was hot having to sit. I sat outside, sat in the car for the rest of the game, man. That was probably the best tech, but the most miserable tech that I've had.
in the first quarter, nonetheless. That's
Yeah, man. Yeah. So I try not to clap so loud anymore.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, the high school league does seem to be very fair about overturning
they
things.
Are.
We've had some kids and some coaches and that kind of deal, and then they look at it fairly, as much as the court of public opinion wants to say that they don't, but they really do look at it fairly. So glad that they.
Yeah, absolutely. I they saved me a lot of money.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's not cheap.
it's not cheap at all. So, yeah, man.
All right. So you're coming into Dreher's, your first year, getting back into Columbia, and I know it's obviously just a weird time with COVID and everything like that. But what kind of style of play do you want to bring to Dreher? What's the just round out your program of what you want to be able to create at Dreher High School?
Pretty much the same thing, you know, I do everywhere I go, man. I want to bring an up-tempo, fast-paced, hard-nosed defensive style of game. I want to be able to play defense, get out on the break, make layups, but I also want to be disciplined. I pride myself and my coaching staff and players on being able to be versatile, because there are obviously games where you got to slow the game down, you got to play half court, but our identity is going to be pressure the ball, get up the floor, make layups, get back on the press, and just play hard-nosed defense. Have fun style of basketball. I don't want to – you know, you got a lot of coaches that like to call the play every time down the floor, which is fine. That works for them. But I like to use my players' athletic ability. The way that I teach a system is we know what we do, a primary, secondary, all the way to the initial offense. So it's not a lot that I have to say in a bunch of sequences. So I just want to be able to play fast, play hard, play smart, man, be disciplined, play defense.
You know, I love all that. Our listeners are going to know that I love all of that. And just so you know, we've had some technical issues that Chris has had to drop the call. Hopefully you get some weather up there in Hackensack, New Jersey. Hopefully he'll be back on the call here shortly, but we're going to keep on rolling. And
no problem.
But I tell you what, you've been around Columbia basketball a long time. We talked about Ricky Balknight, Vince Lowry a little bit. We're talking a little bit off the air about Coach Glimpf, but I'd love to hear about more, or even those guys, more about your mentors as a coach and some of those things that you maybe bring from them to that style of play that you want to bring to Dreher.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being up under Coach Balknight, you know, as a young guy who kind of let me come in and just kind of go to work, I learned a lot about how to run a system. And when I say how to run a system, a lot of coaches do things differently. But like I said, when I was talking earlier, from the primary break to the secondary break, right into what your initial offense is. And we don't have to do a lot of thinking. We just kind of know what to do. And I learned how to run that system from Coach Balknight. And then when I got to Brooklyn Casey with Coach Balknight, you know, being his associate head, then I started learning a lot of integral parts of offense. He ran a freelance offense, which I run a different variation of. But it was another offense where you got rules instead of, you know, you got to set two screens this way and then the play is over. A lot of continuity going on. So the ball can move, guys can move, cuts can be made, backdoor cuts can be made. So I learned a lot about the system and the admin part from Coach Balknight. You know, paperwork, he would let me do buses, you know, bus information, you know, get parents, get food, a lot of integral parts that people don't get to see as far as what we do. A lot of people think coaches just buy X's and O's, and that is the least, that's probably 10% of what we do.
It's so true.
Yeah, man, so Ricky just kind of let me go, and I just learned a lot about how to run a system. Coach Lowry, you know, playing for him my freshman and 10th grade years, kind of like, and I played JV, but, you know, you get moved up and play summers with him, and you get to get coached by him, man, and it was just discipline. He's such hard-nosed, just tough guy, but he's fair. You know, he's not, you know, not biased for any player. I think that's one of the things that I took away, is not being biased towards any player. We had a guy named Mike Hutto, and Mike Hutto was probably ranked, he was a senior my sophomore year. He was ranked in the top 50 somewhere. He was a heck of a guard. I think he came from AC floor, and I think Coach Lowry knew him from over there, man. And Mike was one of those guys, he wanted to wear gold teeth and he wanted to wear his pants down. He wanted to do a lot of different things that Coach Lowry didn't want to do. And, you know, Coach Lowry put him off the team. And for a lot of us, it was kind of like, wow, you know, if Mike can go, we all can go. So I learned a lot of discipline, but being fair across the line. Like, we're not going to let one person just do what they want to do. I learned how to talk to the players. You know, one of the things that Coach Lyre is also good at is being able to talk to you, keep it. I can be stern but be lighthearted at the same time. You know, he used to pull us into the huddle and say, now, y'all know I quit cussing 5 minutes ago. You know, just those types of things, different humor to bring to it, and let kids know that you really love them, you really care for them. You know, Coach Lyre would give you the shirt off his back, as Coach Bartnight would too. But, you know, being as a young, impressionable kid, you know, and then really just kind of having my first varsity experiences where you're in a system and you got Coach Maness on one side, who with Coach Lyre, every stop he's made, you learn a lot from him, man. And it's just those two guys really love their players. And they really just, it was all about, you know, what can I do for you? Not really what you can do for me. And they wanted the best. And they made sure you got everybody they could get in school at the next level. And just holding everybody accountable. So I really took those aspects and kind of combined them with what I learned from Coach Bartnight, man. And I just took it and applied it. And ever since then, thank God it's been successful, because it's definitely nothing that I flipped the switch and said, I figured it out. I haven't figured it out. It's been a blessing. I've been able to put two styles together and make it my own. So it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
You know, that experience you got as a young coach, for them to give you that experience to get food for the team and figure out buses and all that kind of stuff. Those are the things that, and I've been around coaches that have grown up like you and me and Chris, that just, all we want to do is be around the game. But then maybe it's a parent that gets into it just thinking that, oh, it's only about coaching during the game. And like you said, so well, at the most, it's 10% of what's going on. There's so much more administration wise, and it's a huge, huge job. So I wanted to point that out. It's so true.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like the prodigal son, I have returned.
Yeah.
I was waiting on it.
I know Brian counted me out. We got a little power outage here. We got a little storm rolling through Jersey as we're recording this. There's hail coming down about the size of nickels right now. So,
hey,
it's
listen,
fun.
When we finish, I'm going to call you back for the pick six, because I swear you just called it literally 5 minutes.
I did, right? I said about 5 minutes.
I need the lottery numbers when we finish.
Okay, Coach, it's time now for the main part of the podcast here, where you tell us about your greatest game. I want you to bring us in the gym. I want to feel the sweat dripping off the players. I want to hear the crowd getting on you, the crowd booing your team or whatever it was. Tell us about that greatest game. I know one of them you're going to tell us about is a state championship game in the Colonial Life Arena. So bring us into that game and tell us all about it.
You know, that's a I call it the greatest game because of the monumental effort it took from the kids, the community, and just a lot of the things that we went through. Because, you know, at Johnson is very challenging, and some of my players were a lot more challenging. And, you know, they wanted to, you know, and we talked about the discipline thing. I applied a lot of that with that team, man, because they wanted to just kind of do their own thing. And some of the guys we had actually probably about two or three other guys that could have helped that I put off that year. And we got to a point, man, where we were in practice and I just made guys go home because they, whatever was happening off of the floor, they wanted to bring it into practice. And so it took a lot for us to really get some continuity and some structure and just to come together as a team and believe that they could do it. So once we ended up making it, we get to the hotel room, and my AD, who's Eugene Kuhn at the time, said, you know, tell me what you need, you know, to get ready for the game. And I said, well, I'm going to tell you now, we need a hotel room. A hotel, Coach, we live in Columbia. I understand where we live. I need a hotel room, because if not, I don't know what kind of condition, shape. I don't know if anybody's going to sleep tonight. I need to make sure we have a hotel room so I can have eyes on them. And watch them and make sure they're eating good and, you know, just in a comfortable environment where they don't have to worry about anything. Lo and behold, you're dealing with teenagers. We had something to break a rule. You know, I'm the guy, I put tape on the door so I know if you've been in and out of the room. Walk in one of the rooms, somebody broke a violation, and I guess they thought I was playing. And we had to go outside about 4 o'clock that morning. And we went outside and we did some defensive slides. We did some running. I did my whole spiel about what the importance of the game was. And it wasn't just about you, what we were doing for the community, what we were doing for the parents. you know, what had been done in the school in 25 years, you know, get that whole spiel. And now the problem with that is we had to play at 11 o'clock that day. So, you know, the kids are, oh, man, coach, you this, you that. It'll be fine. You can be mad. Guess what? You don't have to play in 6 hours, 7 hours, whatever it was. That's fine. You can be mad. But lo and behold, you know, they got it together. We get to Colonial Life, and it's everybody's got the doggone deer in the headlight look. I mean, these guys are just – they weren't scared, but, you know, that moment and that light come on, it can be really big. It shines really bright. I think I want to say Lake Marion maybe played before us. And I forgot, maybe Lake Marion, Newberry. So the crowd was packed already. It was a good bit of fans in there. And kids have just never been in that environment before. I had never been in that environment before as far as coaching, you know, for a state championship. I've played in plenty of games, plenty of fans. But, you know, this is for all the marbles now. You know, there's no tomorrow. There's no practice. We can't go and redo it and watch film. We got to get it done. So we talked, and you could tell the vibe was, I'm nervous. You know, we were real tight. And, man, we started that game, and they shot out so fast. They had a 10th grade guard. We played not Scotch Branch, but
Whale Branch.
Whale Branch. I started to say Scott. Whale Branch. And that 10th grader got out, man. I think he hit, like, the first four shots he took. And the next thing I know, we were down 12-0. And the next thing I know, we were down 18. And I got guys ready to spaz on the sideline, man. I can hear people in the stands. I heard one guy say, I told you he didn't know what he was doing. The boy's too young. I told you they didn't know what they were doing. I'm like, here we go, the peanut gallery. And I told my guys, I said, man, when you're winning, everybody's with you. When you're losing, them same people will turn on you quick, fast, and hurry. So I was like, we got to play together. So I called a timeout, 18 down. I called a timeout, and I got the group, and I just said, look at it now. We can sit here, and we can point the finger. Y'all go back to the old ways, and we can cry and pout. Or we can dig it out. We can play defense. We can do what we do, and we'll make a run at it. We'll get back. I said, we got a whole half to go. I said, but now, before halftime, we got to get this thing below 10. And Coach Schofield, who be with me at Drill, he said, him and Coach Tony said, Coach, how you feel about 1-3-1? I hate 1-3-1. I hated it because as a young coach, you feel like you succumb to the zone, and you feel like your guys, they got to play this man-to-man. And I look at the score, and I go, well, ain't much else we can lose at this point, fellas. Let's go 1-3-1, man. And I put a little guard. Normally, you put kind of one of your bigs in the middle, but I put a little dog named Nate Nelson. Nate Nelson's probably about 5'6". Then I put him in the middle because he could harass the ball from the front, the back, the side. It didn't make a difference. So I put him in the middle. And I put Mike Knox and I put Peter on the wings to trap with William Tobin played in the back. And I had another guy, Dontrell Corley. And, man, we just trapped and pressed. And every time they put it in the middle, that big would turn. Nate would come by and just poke it out the back. Now, all of a sudden, you hear the crowd coming. And Peter walks up to me. He goes, Coach, they on our side. I said, don't worry about who's on our side. I said, I told you, when you win it and things go well, they'll be on. You just keep doing what we're doing. And lo and behold, we cut it to 9 at halftime, man. I go into the halftime, and I think one of your – as a coach, one of the proudest moments that you can have is when a team and the leaders, they take over. We literally, as a coach staff, said absolutely nothing at halftime. Peter's talk, Mike Knox talk, Nate, all the seniors. I had like 7 seniors. All of them talk. I didn't say one word. You know, you come in as a coach, and you ready to give this spiel, and I'm like, hey, all right, this is what we need to do. Peter goes, Coach, we got it. We good. We don't need you to say nothing. Okay, so Coach Stan, we walk outside. Now, all that sounds well and good, but as a coach, I'm outside rubbing my head. I'm like, boy, I don't know what they're saying. I swear, I hope it's something constructive. I hope they're not in here about to beat each other head in, but it worked out perfectly. They came out with a different look on their face. And when I say it was just a different team that second half, man, because, you know, when you come from a community and you don't believe a lot, and, you know, you get 18 down, that same body language came back, you know, early that first half. We cut that lead and we got the halftime. We came out, that whole body language difference, like, okay, we're supposed to be here. This is what we work for all year. This is all the battles and practice, all coach suspending people and not let people play and all those great things that they didn't like. I got a drill called 8-minute drill that they hate. you know, and they start talking about, hey, this is what we do these things for, man. And that second half, we stayed in that 1-3-1. Peter Goodman hit some big shots. And I tell people all the time, man, your best player is not always the guy that is going to show up. And when I say show up, he might not have all the points. He may not be that guy that you're going to put the ball in. Because Mike Knox, he was a quarterback as well. And when Peter was struggling early, Mike Knox looked at me and said, Coach, don't worry about it. I got you, Coach. I think Mike had 25 that game. And normally we put the ball in Peter's hand and let Peter go to work. Mike Knox came out. Mike Knox was blocking shots. He was getting rebounds. He was pushing the ball up the floor. And we end up cutting the lead, got into overtime. And the body language was kind of like we had it because we had a chance to win it. We made some free throws. We had a chance to win it. Overtime comes, half of them were about ready to fall on the floor. Like, oh, my God, what else can we do? I don't know. Coach, come on. And the other half was like, come on, man, we got it. So, again, didn't say much. Senior leaders got everybody. Come on, y'all listen to Coach. And I said, listen, fellas, this overtime, we got them now. This is what we want. I said, look over. I said, got the hands on the knees. They're tired. You know, the coaches, you know, coach was jumping up and down in the first half. He was screaming, hollering, waving hands. And now all of a sudden he's quiet. I said, we got him. Just stick to doing what we're doing. Stayed in that 1-3-1. Dontrell Corley, who was a junior that year, was really big for us. Everything that came off the rim in overtime, he was tipping it back. From the end of that fourth quarter overtime, everything came off the rim. He was putting it back, put back. Offense, I mean, he had to have about 10 to 12 offensive rebounds in the game. And he played phenomenally with a broken wrist. He had a soft cast on one hand. And he was just a monster. He was a man-child of the paint. And then Nate took over my Briandre Johnson, another guard man, took over. And we just started really that overtime playing our game. We slowed up when we needed to. We ran sets, man. And when that buzzer blew and we won, it was a great game to watch those kids break down and cry, not because of a setback, not because of failure, but because something so many people told them from because of where they came from that they couldn't do. And the tears of joy, that's probably the best thing as a coach that I could ever have happened, that could ever happen to a group of kids that I had. I just loved it, man. That was the greatest game ever.
Sounds like an amazing game, and Brian shared an article with me. I've read through the article. One thing, the only thing worse than that guy in the stands yelling, he doesn't know what he's doing, is if it's your dad yelling that. I told you he didn't know what he was doing.
Listen, we might have had some words.
You turn around, Dad, come on.
I might have called a timeout to address him. Hey, wait a minute. Security, get him out of here.
Yeah, man. Talk about Michael Knox. You talked a little bit about him, and I feel anytime as a basketball coach, if I can have the quarterback from the football team on my basketball team, I will take it every day of the week, especially the way the quarterback positions evolved in the game of football all the way down to the high school level. I mean, he is the alpha all the way. Whether he's your best basketball player or not, that leadership, and like you said, he actually scored 23 and he was 13 of 16 from the free throw line. So just talk about his leadership, maybe not only that game, but throughout the whole season, having a kid like that on your team.
Well, you know, it's funny because Mike Knox was the clown of the team. He wanted to be the rebel of the team all of the time. It annoyed the mess out of me, but I knew how to deal with him. And we dealt with a lot of leadership things because I would always say, in practice, Mike Knox, you are the quarterback of the football team. You cannot tell me that you are making these decisions or you making these bonehead plays. And sometimes, you know, people don't agree with my methods all the time. But I would pull Mike to the side and I would say, Mike, how are you the quarterback, man? You make the most bonehead decisions in the world.
Coach, really, coach? You gonna do me like that, coach?
Yes, because I can't fathom how you just turn this ball over or you throw a 40-foot pass and it hits the wall and we're down 2 with 20 seconds on the clock. And I think the turning point for Mike Knox was we played Lamar the last season of the game at Lamar. We had a chance to outright win the region. We won the region anyway because of the point system, et cetera, et cetera. But we had a chance to win it outright. And it had to be about 20-something seconds on the clock. We draw the play up. Mike Knox comes down, And I would say with 12 seconds left, he takes a freaking half-court shot and just throws it off the wall. And I went berserk on Mike. I mean, I went crazy. And it wasn't because of the shot. It was, again, what are you thinking, all right, from a leadership standpoint? And we've done this just the year before, and you've been in this situation. Like, you know, and he never really took a lot seriously. And this was one that he didn't laugh when I jumped on. Normally Mike would laugh. So he really kind of took that to heart. Then we got on the bus, and Mike was still feeling some type of way about, you know, how I handled it. And I, on the bus, we had a conversation, and he goes, after we finished talking, he goes, Coach, I understand now. Because me being a quarterback, you want me to be the quarterback of the team. And yeah, Mike, exactly. But, you know, everybody's, you know, come to Jesus moment is different. And I said, we're going to need you in these playoffs. And I can't have you making those type of decisions. You know, you have to know what we're doing, time and score, which we talked about all the time. You got to know what you're doing. And, man, he just kind of went on a tear leadership-wise. He was bringing guys together. He was talking to guys. Like, if there was a switch to just click after that Lamar game, he was just like, listen, I'm not going to let that happen again. And Coach, whatever happens, I got your back. And he just took off from there.
He's got a great quote in this article by Stephen Fastenow. Any team, this is Knox here, any team that makes it to the championship, we respect. We didn't expect them to hand us the game because they've been here before. We just fought hard, fought through it, and took it. And I love that, just based on everything that you're sharing there, Coach, and everything that he's saying there. And I've got just the most incredible numbers here. I'm over here running some of these numbers here. I've never seen a stat line like this. And we don't have full stats from this article and from this game, at least we don't right. here. But C.A. Johnson shoots 38%. Now, you know, as a coach, if I'm looking at a win or a loss, if I take the scoreboard out of it, I don't know the score. If I look at a team that shoots 38%, I'm thinking that team's going to lose. But you shoot 38%, 1 of 9 from three, okay? You're down 38-20 in the first 15 minutes of the game, all right, just before – or first 13 minutes of the game, just before halftime. In the final 20-something minutes, let's see, that'd be 23 minutes now, you outscore Whale Branch 51-26, including the overtime. So just unbelievable turnaround. And just going back to this quote by Knox, we just fought through it and we took it. So it's just unbelievable to see that type of leadership, your adjustments defensively to see them pay off in a state championship game in a multi-million-dollar arena had to be just unbelievable.
Yeah, man, just that refuse to quit. You know, that was our motto all year long, refuse to quit. You know, we're going to have to take the games we want. Nobody's going to give it to us because we played Hammond well early that year. We beat Northeast that year. And I'm like, no, well, Branch has been here. Louisville beat them the year before. So, you know, you expect that experience to come into play. And like I said, we got 18 down, man. I was like, listen, I told you, they're not going to give us anything. They're ready to go put up the trophy and win. And that's just what it took, man. Guys understood, we have to go take this game. Not going, and you're right. Statistically, we were terrible. I mean, you could tell jitters were there. We couldn't. I think Peter, first two jump shot, one hit the side of the backboard, one was over the rim. It was just kind of one of those things that happens, you know, in the game, man. And they refused to quit.
Coach, just a random question. Sometimes this has come up with other greatest games we've talked about. Have you ever watched the film of that game, or do you not even ever want to watch it? Some coaches don't ever want to watch it.
It's funny. I didn't watch it immediately. I probably end up watching it toward the end of the summer. And every time I watch it, I get emotional. And I've showed it maybe once or twice to some different teams, not for the state championship aspect, but from how hard they played. And I just wanted them to see the things that we did and the things that I expected coming into maybe a new school. But I didn't watch it much, but I did watch the end of that summer, and I sat out with my coaching staff and we watched it. And it was just, you know, we put some food on the grill, man, and we just kind of, you know, as coaches, you try not to revel in the moment too much, but those just one of those things with that group of guys. We just wanted to kind of see, you know, man, look at the resiliency on these kids, like look at from where they came from. So we did end up watching. I haven't watched it in 2-3 years, probably. You know, I don't even bring it up anymore. You know, it's just kind of one of those things. Now you lay it to rest. It is where it is. And I do take clips from it, though. I don't watch the whole game. I take little different clips, you know, like being 18 down. This is what we did to come back. Look at how this guy's on the floor, those different things. But to watch it in its entirety, man, I just kind of let that stay at rest and let that moment be as it is.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I've had moments like that as a coach, those games that mean so much, and go back to show it to a future group thinking that, oh, they're going to get into it as much as we were as that group. And I don't know, I'm curious for you, with those groups that you've showed it to since then, do they get it, or is it just really just that group that really just fully got it? Is it was one of those things that a future group will never be able to fully grasp how special that game really was?
Yeah, I don't think they'll fully grasp it, because, you know, like I told them before they watched, I said, and I preface it with, some of you all are going to pay attention because some of you really want to win. Some of you really want to know what it's like to be in that moment. And I said, some of you are not going to watch it because it doesn't pertain to you. You have no clue about what happened at C.A. Johnson, the history, anything. And that's fine. You know, I expect that. But I always tell them, I said, now after this, I'll find out who my leaders are. Because if you're really a basketball guy and you watch that game, your emotions get caught up into it too, especially with the commentary with Stacey Huff. And I forgot the other guy's name, but, you know, they did a really good job of commentating that, man. And it was like, you know, and it's on TV. So it's like, if you're paying attention and you're into it, you're getting motivated. And I had some guys, I showed it at West Florence, man, and three of my seniors, like, coach, I don't know if we're going to win it this year, but I want to do everything we can to try to get to that moment. And we had a good year that first year at West Florence. They really took that and referenced some moments and referenced some things of what they wanted to do. You know, my biggest thing was, everywhere I go, let's make history. Let's do something that hadn't either been done in a while, or let's do something that we've never done before. So they really took that to heart. You know, we won region that year, the first year at West Florence, which hadn't been won since 1992, I believe. So yeah, man, some take it, some don't, but, you know, I always look for the ones who take it, because those are going to be your leaders at the end of the day.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. By showing them that game, you kind of figure out, yeah, I think, like you said, there are going to be some kids that just aren't going to pay attention to it. They're going to go, oh, that was some other team, some other time. But you could show them a game of yours or a game of some other teams, and it's going to be the same effort that wins the championship.
Yeah, you could put Michael Jordan up there. I'm sure half of them watched the documentary, the 10-part, and was like, okay, and,
you know. Well, I mean, you know, you talk about Jordan, but these kids grew up watching LeBron.
LeBron, right.
You talk about the play that he blocked Andre Iguodala. Like, you talk about that effort.
Yes.
That's the greatest player in the world that went to that length, that effort, to make a play to help win a championship. But
absolutely.
Coach, so we're coming to the end of the podcast here. We'd like to ask a fun question. If I asked a player that played for you 10, 15 years ago, and I asked a player that played for you last year at West Florence, what's the one thing they would say that Coach Jarvis always says? It could be something funny. It could be a teaching point. It could be a mantra. You know, they all, I always say this to the podcast, you know, they have a Coach Jarvis impersonation that they do when they're not around. When they're doing the impersonation, what are they impersonating you saying?
Well, the impersonation is always on the line. That's just kind of, from Brooklyn Casey, Ridgeview to now, is on the line. And they know that an 8-minute drill. And when they say that, they know either, A, we have done something that we seriously should not have been doing, or we didn't meet a criteria, or coach just felt like we needed to get in some shape today. But that's just been the mantra. They mock me all the time. On the line. Y'all please be quiet. I don't hear that. But it is funny, man. And they like mocking that because they know the discipline and why that came. So it's just fun. I still get guys down, you know, on social media. They'll call me and, coach, you remember when you on the line, man, and we did such and such. So it's just great, man. It's good to know the kids know you love them, man.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brian, I believe that is the first repeat thing we've had said, because it was either Coach Peckham or Coach Dieter that said on the line, and then they ran it after they won a game.
Is that was Coach Peckham, episode 32. That was Coach Peckham. That's right.
He would good guy, too, man. We had some battles when he's at Fox, when I was at Johnson, he's at Fox Creek, man. We had some good, Coach Peck was a real good guy.
He used to say that all the time, and his players then told him after they won a big game, they came out and they said, on the line, and he went out there and he ran in his church shoes.
Yeah.
Down south.
yeah, man. Got to put your church shoes on. I think at Johnson, they got me twice. I kind of challenged him. I said, if y'all don't win by such and such, you know, team you know you're supposed to beat. We don't win by such and such. As soon as we get off the bus, coach, on the line. Here we go. So, yeah, man, it's fun, man. Definitely fun moments.
That's kind of the paradox or the ironic thing of coaching, and that I don't want to say necessarily the harder you are on kids, but lots of times the harder you are on kids, the more they realize that you care about them. And I love to hear, you know, just them mocking you. And it's like they mock me when I ran my kids. And I almost cringe. I probably said this on the show before, but when a kid walks up to me and he says those words of, hey, coach, do you remember when? And I'm like, oh, no, I can't wait to hear what's coming next. Made us run 14, 17s. I'm like, oh, goodness. You know, but they love me. Their eyes are twinkling. They know that made them better as people. They hated it at the moment, but it made them it just made them stronger. And so that's what we do. That's been a theme on the show. Starting from episode one with Chris Gaskin, it's just we're here to train better people and make them better. That's all we do, and we just happen to do it through basketball. So I love to hear that they on the line. I love it.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
We might change the name of the podcast to On the Line.
Okay. That'd be a good idea. On the line. Yeah, man.
Well. Darryl Jarvis, this has been an absolute pleasure to have you on The Greatest Games. We know great things are in store for you at Dreher High School. So tell our listeners how they can follow along with you, along with Dreher, any kind of social media information. We'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, you can definitely find us on Twitter at Dreher Men's Basketball. We are also on Instagram, and Instagram is the same thing. And one of the things we try to do, too, is we try to pay homage to the former Dreher players. So we'll do like a flashback Thursday, and we'll put, you know, I think we did Chris Brown one Thursday. We did Tyler Harris one Thursday. We'll do Tevin Mack one time when he gets available. But you can definitely find us on Instagram and Twitter at Dreher Men's Basketball.
That's wonderful. We'll follow along, and we'll put those in the show notes as well for our listeners. But again, Coach, just can't thank you enough for coming on The Greatest Games. It's been a real pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me, man. I had a lot of fun.
Well, for my co-host, Chris de Blasio, I am Brian Rosefield, and thank you for listening to this episode of The Greatest Games.